Good morning. Today is Friday, February 16th, 2018, and the time is 8:01 a.m. This meeting of the House Education Committee will come to order. Members of House Education present are Vice Chair Justin Parrish, Representative Chuck Cott, Representative Jennifer Johnston, Representative Dave Tallarico, and myself, Harriet Drummond. Representative Sponholz has been excused. We have a quorum to conduct business. You know the drill about cell phones. Today our recording secretary is Sandy Edwardson and Ben Manley, our LIO moderator. Thank you both. We are kind of short on time today, which is why I'm rushing. Today we will have the regular House Education Committee, just us, here until 9 a.m., after which we will convene the House Budget Subcommittee for the Department of Education and Early Development, chaired by Representative Dan Ortiz. In the regular Education Committee, we are hearing today House Bill 339, Increased Base Student Allocation, and House Bill 233, Education Tax Credits, Sunset Repeals. Our first bill today is House Bill 339, so I'd ask the bill sponsor to come forward and present the bill. I would also note that we have Alexi Painter from Ledge Finance Division available in the room for questions. Good morning, Representative Guerra.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to present a more full picture of what schools are going through right now with funding since 2015 that on an inflation-adjusted basis is about $90 million lower than it was today than it was back then. We've put together a sort of larger PowerPoint, not too large, I hope, and I just need to figure out how to flip the first page. You know, you've heard the statement that resonates with me the most, and we've got a page on it, but it's what one parent once said to me, which is, my child can't take sixth grade over again when you guys get your act together. Okay, so lost opportunity today is opportunity you don't get back later on. It's largely a permanent damage. House Bill 339 increases the base student allocation and the per student allocation by $100. That's the traditional amount this legislature has increased funding when it's increased funding. Throughout the 1990s, we had flat funding for roughly a decade, and we're in that period again right now. The question is, what kind of impacts does that have? In Juneau, they've done what a number of school districts have done, the wealthier school districts, let's say. They've had reserves, and they've tried to use their reserves to dampen the effects of flat funding or lost funding. But they've lost a significant number of teachers over the years, their class sizes have gone up, and now they're at the point where they don't have the reserves to ward off much deeper cuts coming next year. This is funding in actual dollars, not adjusted by inflation, mostly reflected by the loss of the $43 million that was in the budget in 2015 that is now gone. And then when you consider inflation, according to the Division of Legislative Finance, we're about $90 million behind where we were in 2015. Those are dollars. The dollars don't paint the picture. And the question is, what have school districts been able to do? Since 2013 in Anchorage, we've lost almost 400 positions, full-time equivalents. Roughly half of those, more than half of those, have been teachers. Many of those have been teachers' assistants. I spoke to an English as a second language teacher 2 years ago, and she says it's just not possible. I mean, she by herself, with the staff that she had in her school, can't do what's needed to bring the children that she's teaching up to grade. At the same time, some of the most expensive students who deserve equal education, those numbers have gone up. Special education enrollments up 3.2%. So for those of you who don't know, the base student allocation is close to $6,000 per student, but a special education student costs about $29,000 to educate. And under federal law and under, I think, the consciences of all of us, those students, too, deserve an equal opportunity to reach their potential. In the MATSU, the answer is pretty much the same. They've lost roughly 250 teachers since 2013. They're facing something around an $8 million cut next year with flat funding, and that money will result, we've been told, but they haven't passed their budget yet, probably somewhere around 80 or 90 full-time positions, most of which we believe will probably be teachers. I heard from an Eagle River student, I can't remember if it was in this committee or in my office, and her mother was a Millikan Education Educator Award winner last year. And they have discussions in their family on whether they can stay in the state. And that's really the big problem that transcends both education and the economy right now until the state gets its fiscal house in order, which is teachers are thinking about leaving, our best teachers are thinking about leaving. When you lose your best teachers, your schools become a place that is not able to teach to the standards we would expect. Our best teachers are our most important teachers, and they like many people in Alaska, are thinking about leaving as in education. I think it's fair to say that parents and educators do not see a commitment to public education coming from the state right now. We met an Anchorage student from Stellar who says his classroom is so big that he doesn't get to ask the questions he needs to ask in class. You know, he feels like he's got a certain amount of limited time. He feels like he would hog his time if he asked more questions than other kids, and he walks out of class on many days not being able to ask the questions that he needs to ask in his biology class. Those are the individual student impacts. Probably facing close to 100 teacher losses in 2019, this coming year, and another 107 teachers in 2020 as this world of funding that does not keep up with costs continues. And let's just admit it, flat funding is a cut. It's better than a $70 million cut, but and I know we've had to battle those over the years, but this is what the impact is going to be on students. In Anchorage, as in most school districts, they've tried to focus as much as they can on administrative cuts, but they're running out of those. And so the impacts are going to fall on teachers and classroom curriculum more and more and more as flat funding continues or cuts continue into the future. We heard from a Wrangell High School student. This isn't just an Anchorage or urban problem. We heard from an Anchorage student who says they don't get to take 3 years of foreign language anymore. So we have this wonderful system where you get to watch classes on a video where you don't get to ask any questions, or you get to read materials online where you don't get to ask any questions. And I've said this before, I think that's reading, that's not learning. That's not how you take a course, but that's how many Alaskan students have to take a course when they don't have a teacher in their school. We heard from one Juneau Douglas High School student who says the obvious, that they're hearing their peers talk about not coming back to Alaska. It's the brain drain. Is that what we want? Is that the legacy that this legislature wants, a brain drain from the state of Alaska? We heard from one of the school district reps here who just went through some of the losses they faced, losses in nurses, losses in Tlingit language teachers, losses in special ed teachers, losses in classroom teachers. And that has the side impact of burning out the best teachers who remain. His class sizes are up. You heard about the teacher the other day who her science class went from 28 to 32 kids in middle school, and she said that was the breaking point for her to be able to do individual education, to be able to teach to the student. And that's what you're supposed to do in education. You're not supposed to bulk teach. You're supposed to teach to individual students. In Juneau, they've lost close to 100 teachers and other support staff. Next year's cuts will largely be deeper in the classroom, as the superintendent has said. We're asking schools to teach to higher standards. When you hear about administration cuts, people think those are just paper pushers, and those are not paper pushers. Administration means the training for teachers, to teach to higher standards. That's administration. There are a lot of things in administration that have direct impacts on the classroom. According to the CFO in Anchorage, last year's cuts were about 122 positions. no student is more equal than another student. You know, I hear some people say that they're concerned about what's going on with gifted students. And gifted students, we're losing support for them. But we're also obviously losing support for the students who have very little. And those are the students that are at the greatest risk. One of the teachers who works at one of the lower-income schools in Anchorage, Clark Middle School, has said they've had to combine English as a second language and IEP students in the same classes. Those are not the same students. They do not have the same needs. And what we're doing in some classes and in some schools is bulk teaching. In the Kenai Peninsula School District, there's no music taught in many schools now. They've tried not to cut teachers there. That's coming. They've tried to cut elsewhere. But their future cuts are going to hit teachers. They're one of the districts that have sort of dug into the reserves that school districts try to create for 1 or 2 years of bad funding. But if you look over the last, since 2009, we've had maybe one strong year of school funding, and the rest have been very close to flat or worse. We heard an interesting story from a student in Cordova. Their chemistry is offered every other year. That's the cut that that hit this student the hardest. And she wasn't able to take chemistry this year. She had other courses she had to take. And she won't get to take chemistry next year. And so she's going to have to wait 2 years to take chemistry. And she's concerned that's going to affect her college applications. I mean, this is having an impact on the future of students to succeed, to reach their potential, and to be part of an educated workforce that will help move this state forward. In Seward, you can probably hear a list of things that are going on in that school, but I just wanted to address a separate subject. Things like music matter. You don't send the children to school to learn just the three R's, one of which is really a W, but they're called the three R's for some reason. One music teacher combined for middle school and high school in Seward, at Soldotna Prep, no choir, no band, or art classes. I guess you can give people the most basic education and think everything's going to be okay, and I think you're fooling yourself. I think we're all fooling ourselves. Those are all our way of saying that a child who's undereducated, a child who's not educated to reach their potential, is a child who's lost. I gave you a misestimate. The numbers change on an annual basis. The cost of a base student allocation increase of about $100 was approaching $30 million with the student counts we have right now. According to the fiscal note, the cost of a base student allocation increase is $25 million. The state has a $2.5 billion budget deficit. There is not enough action in this legislature to eliminate it. Everybody has their own ideas, but there's no plan right now. But students can't wait for this state to get its act together. We can all point fingers, but we can point fingers while students are losing opportunity, losing their chances to succeed, and losing their chances to thrive. And that is not an impact that I think is proper for this legislature to impose. I mean, if you want to be fair about it, this state doesn't have enough money for the budget, for even a basic budget right now without a fiscal plan. But we're going to burn through savings again this year. And maybe some people feel that in 2019 they'll come back and we'll have a fiscal plan. I don't know what other people think. I know what I think, which is we needed a fiscal plan 3 years ago. That's my personal view. But I'm one legislator. I just don't think you can put society on hold while legislators decide that we all have 21 votes on the House side and 11 votes on the Senate side to pass a plan to eliminate the budget deficit. So with that, I'm happy to take questions. I just wanted to give people a picture of what's going on around the state. This is a partial picture. I would like to read just one other thing that's not in the PowerPoint. You know, this is not an urban thing, and this is not a rural thing. This is a statewide thing. And I received a letter from, and you have it in your packet, from an active parent in Iliamna in the Lake and Penn district. And she said that she's seen the Lake and Peninsula District save and cut with flat funding they've received now for the past 4 years. They've eliminated programs, and last year we had no choice but to cut school days. off of our school calendar. It's not a way to move education forward. You're going to hear stories like this, and you'll keep hearing stories like this from around the state. This is a statewide problem. So with that, I'm happy to take questions from folks. There was a question, if I can remember while I'm still here, there was a question that came up the other day, and I'll try to remember what it was. And we looked into the answer, but I can't remember what the question is, sort of sitting here right now.
It will come to you. Thank you, Representative Guerra. I know this is difficult to listen to. Representative Kopp.
Thank you, Representative Guerra. Just to clarify, in FY15, the legislature distributed $43 million outside the formula. Is that correct? Mm-hmm.
I think that's a fair way to say it. It was distributed through the formula. So two districts under the formula's calculations for which districts receive the money, just like the base student allocation, but it wasn't made a base student allocation increase itself. So that money went to school districts as if it was formula funding.
Yeah. So Chair Drummond, to my point, which Chair Drummond just helped me with, is it was a one-time appropriation, which is what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. It was not in the budget previously, in the previous fiscal year, and it wasn't after year. So what I'm saying is if you take out that one-time $43 million infusion, actually the budget has increased from $1.275 billion to, put my glasses on here, it's gone up about, instead of a $25 million increase, you would just have the reverse. Instead of a decrease, you'd have an increase. So what I'm saying is that we did have a $50 BSA increase in 16. We did have a $50 BSA increase in 17. It's that one-time appropriation. If you use that as a baseline, it looks like, the legislature's dropping the ball. But I think, we have been doing these BSA increases, and I'm not arguing with you about the need for money for education. It's a totally separate argument. I'm just saying if you take that one-time cash infusion of $43 million distributed outside the formula, it looks like, we're not funding to the level, which I think everybody here is. So that's just a point of clarification.
Through the chair.
Go ahead, Representative.
I think it's fair for you to say it that way. There was much debate on the bill that passed in 2015. Many of us felt that the declining money in out years was not appropriate, that it would result in school cuts. But the $43 million was distributed through the formula. It just was not included in the annual base student allocation. There was outside money that was supposed to be distributed through the formula in the following year. And Representative Drummond and I objected to the deletion of that funding, but that funding was deleted. So there was supposed to be funding again in the next 2 years that came outside the formula to be distributed through the base student allocation. That funding was wiped out of the budget in 2016 and 2017. So it was not supposed to disappear the way it did. But school districts have dealt with it, and there will be a lot of back and forth between school districts about whether losing $43 million is not losing $43 million.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. And again, Representative Guerra, please understand I'm not arguing about the need for money. It's just looking at what we're using as a baseline, because that FY15 was a one-time cash infusion, but we're kind of using it to make a point. But I think that you can make the point in other ways. I don't think we're funding $25 million less on a decline. I think actually we can show year-over-year improvements if we don't look at that one-time cash infusion. That's my only point.
Through the chair.
Go ahead.
That's why I wanted to let you know so instead of arguing about funding, because we can all make funding numbers look different, we could add in the money we put into PERS TERS that doesn't go into the classroom. We could add in school construction money that doesn't go into the classroom. And we can add in our qualms on school construction money and how it gets spent, and that doesn't go into the classroom. That's why I added what the impacts have been to students. It's been close to 400 lost teachers and staff in Anchorage. It's going to be close to 100 lost teachers next year, and that's the impact. It's the money is not as important as to what's happening to schools, and that's why we tried to calculate what is happening to schools. It's lost courses, it's lost teachers, it's lost nurses. It's lost English as a second language teachers, and it's lost opportunity.
We need to sure. hurry it up because we have another bill.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Okay.
So, Madam Chair, I think Representative Gehr is raising some excellent issues, and to me this just underscores, we know what the number one cost driver in education is. It's health care, right?
That's right.
And so the only way the state fixes that, rather than, you know, aggressively reform the way we take care of our teachers and staff, looking at, you know, how we can more optimally pay those costs, we just find more money in the BSA. And I think, to me, this underscores why we have to look at better ways of looking at our highest cost drivers, so that we don't have to go for just finding larger and larger cash appropriations to wrestle with these very serious problems of funding, because I think our teachers do suffer. But I just wanted to get it on the record that, you know, health care is the most critical issue that we have to address, because that is what's driving the cost in every district. Thank you.
Thank you. Just briefly, through the Chair.
Yes.
I completely agree with you, Representative Kopp, and this legislature has not tackled the issue. I don't think there are the bills to comprehensively change to bend the curve this year, and the state needs to get serious about health care costs for the reasons you stated.
And I would like to make a correction also. The highest cost piece of any school district's budget is people. Insurance, yeah, probably next. And the way I look at it, the cost of health insurance goes up and teachers get cut. And this is no way to run a school district. Representative Johnston, you had a question.
Yes. You had for ASD, you had a 34% decrease in preschool. Is that for preschoolers with IEPs?
Increase.
Increase, I mean.
Yeah, I noticed that number.
The information we were given in May.
You can get back to me.
May know better. We will get back to you. We believe it's just preschool overall, not just the IEP portion of preschool students.
And I do know that currently ASD is being very innovative in their preschool, and they're allowing nonprofit preschools to use ASD facilities, and the superintendent has said publicly that it's the best way to deal with preschool, because it's addressing the preschool having more children involved in it for less money in this quality preschool. The there's a couple things here that I'm so sorry that you weren't in my office when all these students and school boards were coming around, because I had a totally different conversation. There is some exciting things going on in this state. There's some exciting innovations. There's cross-fertilization among school districts. And while I would love to think sometimes this happens when we have a lot of money, it doesn't. These students that were in my office were sharing some pretty fascinating stories. I did not hear all the doom and gloom you did. I heard it, and then we went on to other discussions, and then I heard more light in their eyes, and I heard some very exciting things. So I just want to put that on record, that there's some exciting things going on. I'm not sure if you were part of the Education Challenge. Were you? Yeah. So It's exciting times, and I do not want to not highlight what's going on, because it has been exciting. The other thing that, and you, as far as healthcare, I am actually, a lot of us are actively working on healthcare. And so to say that it's not being actively worked on, I'd beg to differ. And if we've gotten to this spot after 30 some odd years, so it takes time to tamper it all down again. So, I'm very hopeful, but I guess I'm a perennial optimist. The last thing I would like to comment on, you're not the only person that has come before committees that I've been on saying that we have no fiscal plan on the table. And again, being a perennial optimist, I saw that both houses had a majority vote for POMV, and I'm holding tight to that. And I hope your caucus is holding tight to that, because I hope we can get out this year with a POMV because that gets us a start to a fiscal plan. Thank you.
Through the chair.
Representative Guerra.
I have also heard from students who are thriving and parents whose children are thriving and teachers who are doing the best that they can. That does not make up for the fact that you get chemistry every 2 years in some schools. It doesn't make up for the fact that you're not able to ask questions in class because your class has become so big. I think schools are doing the best with what they have. I think the educators out there should be applauded for doing the best with what they have. I think there's a difference between parents who are fully engaged with their children and parents who are not, and I think that's a dividing line that we've always had in our schools. But I don't think that we're doing what we can to give the students in this state their full ability to achieve their potential. I do think that there are a lot of good things going on, and I would not deny that. But I think we're also losing out. On health care, I did not say that people are not doing things on health care. I'm saying that I don't think we have the focus in this legislature, and it's nobody's fault. There are people who are picking up a bill here and a bill here there that are going to do good things, the price transparency bill, for example. But alone, without a much more comprehensive effort, we are not going to to create a major bend and reduction in the curve on health care costs. Those are much bigger things. So I do applaud the folks who are moving forward. We were going to do a price transparency bill. I think people were battling to do that bill. I think Representative Sponholz has done an amazing job with that bill. There are other pieces of legislation, but I don't think that there's the comprehensive fix sitting before this legislature. And in defense of legislators with two staff members, that's a very difficult thing for a legislator to do. I think that's a statewide effort and a community-wide effort that is going to take some time.
Follow up?
Really quickly, we have
just
another
a quick
bill
follow-up. Actually, Municipality of Anchorage has probably passed the best transparency bill, and that is coming locally. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Johnston. Representative Parrish, quickly.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'll just leave this for everyone to think about, and unless Representative Gary, you'd like to respond. Why should we let the value of our students' education be gnawed away at year after year by inflation?
I want to make some closing comments. To hear that ESL students and students with IEPs are being taught in the same classroom is abominable. That is not teaching to the students' needs. Representative Guerra, you said a special ed student costs how much?
This is older information, but when we increased the funding for special ed students back in the mid-2000s, I think we were told about $29,000.
Okay, and on that same page, intensive needs enrollment is up 8.6%. Those are the kids with incredibly medically fragile kids that require nursing assistance and so on. They cost $70,000 a year. And I have a feeling that preschool enrollment is up because income is down in families, and more kids have become eligible for Head Start and other programs that are delivered in our schools due to socioeconomic conditions. But I would love to hear from the Anchorage School District how it is that preschool enrollment is up. We do need to have more preschool. Representative Guerra, any closing statements? And we will be setting this bill aside and coming back to it, hopefully for either invited or public testimony next time that we can.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Now, I just go back to the statement that resonates with me, which is a child who doesn't receive the education they need and deserve in sixth grade isn't going to come back 5 years later for it.
That's right. Thank you very much, Representative Guerra.
Thank you.
And I would like to invite Representative Tuck to present his bill, House Bill 233. This will be followed immediately by invited testimony, and I will note that we have Dan Stickle, Chief Economist, and Brandon Spanos, Deputy Tax Director, both from the Department of Revenue, available in the room for question. Good morning, Representative Tuck.
Good morning, and thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, committee members, for hearing our bill today, a bill that deals with the education tax credits.
You need to speak into the microphone.
I'm sorry, House Bill 233, education tax credit bill. Basically, what the bill does, it extends the effective date for the repeal of the education tax credits from December 31st, 2018 to January 1st, 2025, basically a six-year extension. Our education system, our education tax credit program allows private businesses to make charitable contributions to support public education in Alaska and private education as well. Private businesses can give to fund facilities and programs across the education programs throughout Alaska, and they do this through direct monetary contributions as well as contributing equipment and supplies. Private businesses can give the fund facilities. Okay, the objective is to help the next generation. So it's basically a simple bill. All we're trying to do is extend that. We see it from the fishing industry to the mining industry to construction industry, oil and gas industry, to where not only are the industries able to contribute directly to our education facilities, but also be able to get students interested in those career opportunities as well. So it's a direct connection between businesses, our education system, directly to our students.
All right, questions? Representative Kopp.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Tuck, and staff. I'm really excited about this bill. Thanks for carrying it. I've heard from Hecla Mining, heard from Greens Creek, heard from other industries, oil and gas. Like you said, Representative Tuck, this makes education directly responsive to the needs of the local community. It also promotes a strong Alaska labor force, local labor, local hire. And I think for all the right reasons, our state is carrying forward a great policy, and I 100% support this legislation.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
And as actually, Madam Chair, I forgot to introduce myself. For the record, I'm Representative Chris Tuck, District 23, and joining me is my Chief of Staff, Kendra Klosser. Thank you.
All right, great. If there are no more questions at this time, I'd like to move directly into invited testimony. I have Susan Foley. Are you in the room or on the phone? Or in the Anchorage LIO?
Hi.
Can you hear me?
No, ma'am. I am on the phone.
Okay, great. Ma'am, go ahead and put your name and affiliation on the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Susan Foley, and I am the president of the University of Alaska Foundation. I am testifying today from Anchorage. Madam Chair, I have submitted a letter in support of this bill, and I know that you are very short on time today, so I'm going to call out a couple of items that are supplemental to the information in that letter, and will limit my time just that way. The University of Alaska is, of course, one of the highest recipients of contributions as a result of the education tax credit, and the impact has been significant. There are companies in Alaska that have a great desire to support education and to make contributions, but they do so very strategically. And one of the aspects of that is planning, multi-year planning that they do. And they want to have impact over a sustained period of time so that their contributions are, so that their employees can see the benefit of their contribution. When they do that, it makes the six-year extension of this bill very, very important because it enables them to partner with educational institutions and to implement and get programs up and running that they could not consider otherwise. So that multi-year aspect of this is extremely influential. In addition, we at the foundation have received indications from corporations that the way that the education tax credit is structured right now is a very major incentive for their donations. The fact that they can see impact directly and that that impact is attributed to them is very, very important to them. It also enables them to partner in programs that are most significant as far as the future of their business enterprises are concerned. Finally, for an academic institution, the long-term nature of this extension is important because it takes time to start programs and to get them up and running most efficiently and most effectively. It takes time to recruit students, and it takes time to bring things to fruition so that there is some real benefit there. With that, Madam Chair, I will close. I am always available for any questions and any information that would be helpful to any of you. And I very much appreciate the work that all of you do there.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Foley. Any questions for Ms. Foley at this time? Okay, seeing none, thank you very much for your testimony. Ms. Foley, I'm not sure I have the letter from you. Please make sure to email it to my office, rep.harriet.drummond@akledge.gov. Thank you very much.
Will do. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, I have Brad Harris. Are you on the phone with us, Mr. Harris?
Yes, I'm actually giving testimony this morning, Madam Chair, with President of the University, or Alaska Pacific University, Robert Anders.
Very good.
If it's okay, I think we'd like him to start.
Very good. Go ahead and put your name on the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is Robert Anders, President of Alaska Pacific University, here with Brad Harris. And I'd like to voice our support, and we have letters as well submitted for Senate Bill, or for House Bill 233. I think, as it was already stated, this is critical connection between industry, education, and students. It facilitates community-based research that really engages students both with industry and the external community, which is inherent and very essential component of Alaska Pacific University's education. And I'll turn it over to Brad Harris to speak specifically on the benefits he has seen with students and research here at the university.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Professor Brad Harris. I'm an Alaska resident. I was born and raised in Homer, and now I serve as an associate professor of fisheries and aquatic science at Alaska Pacific University. I'm speaking today in support of House Bill 233. as you've heard already in the summary of the bill and in testimony, this is an incredibly important component of our current profile in terms of education, and I'd like to speak specifically from my experience as a professor, seeing the resources that come from industry go directly through to support student outcomes, as is the stated goal of this piece of legislation. If you hear anything in my testimony today, it's very simple, that the tax credit program is working as designed. It's producing opportunities for students in Alaska to have high-quality education, in particular in areas that directly align with needs within our state. It's producing opportunities for world-class education and research opportunities, ultimately a win-win solution for educational institutions, students, and industry. So as a professor, I'd just like to outline four things that are important strategic components of the way the tax credit program works that map directly through to the outcomes that I'm referring to. First, the tax credit program allows me directly to reach out and to recruit and support excellent students from outside of Alaska all the way through to Alaska's rural and tribal communities. In particular, this is important in our natural resource fields. These are highly competitive fields revolving around natural resource sciences. The tax credit program supports tuition, project support, and elements that are critical for us to recruit students. Second, it allows us to invest in strategically important research areas, In particular, these applied research projects require high levels of engagement from professionals in the practicing world. So, for example, researchers from federal and state agencies, other universities, are drawn to Alaska because of the nature of the research that we're doing, and our students benefit from this. We can develop these robust and strategic partnerships, which is three, with the state, federal, industrial, and private partners that ultimately produce new levels of funding. So because we have ongoing projects, we can submit proposals which are successful at a high rate, resulting in value added and growth of these programs. And finally, we're expanding research and education capacity in Alaska with our partnerships around the nation and around the world. We have researchers from Cornell University, from the Smithsonian, from NOAA, the USGS, and within the state, Department of Fish and Game and Fish and Wildlife Service, actively working with our students to address natural resource issues that are important to Alaska. So in the letter that I've submitted, I've attached a list outlining some very specific outcomes, including hometowns of students educated with support of the tax credit and where they're working now. And this is a small subset of the students that are being impacted by this legislation in front of you today. But hopefully it illustrates my point that I raised earlier, which is the tax credit program is working. And finally, I respectfully request that you support House Bill 233. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Harris. And Mr. Anders, are there any questions from the committee for either of these gentlemen? All right. Thank you very much for your testimony today, and I have your letters. Next up is Mike Satre from the Council of Alaska Producers and Greens Creek Mine. He is in the room. So I'm going to have to ask Representative Tuck or his staffer to make some space. Good morning. Good to see you.
Good morning, Chair Drummond, members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to be here today. My name is Mike Satre. I'm the manager of government and community relations at the Hecla Greens Creek Mine here in Juneau, and I'm also a board member of the Council of Alaska Producers. I would also be remiss if I did not mention that my wife is in her 20th year in the Juneau School District, so what you do in this committee affects my family directly, and we appreciate your work and dedication and service. I want to first start with some general comments about tax policy. We have many discussions about tax policy in this building, and we know that we can tax things to curtail things that might not be beneficial to our communities, and we can roll back taxes to encourage certain things. So this tax credit, the education tax credit, is one of these ways to encourage something. And so from my perspective, what this does is it encourages industry to invest in our educational system, both at the secondary level and with our universities, in order to form partnerships, not only benefit us as companies, but benefit the regions that we do business to build community capacity. I think if you look around statewide in all of our different economic sectors, one of our greatest challenges is recruitment and retention of an Alaska workforce. And as we work to grow our economy, that challenge is going to become even greater. This is something we have realized here at the Greens Creek Mine over our many years of operation. If we can get Alaskan workers to work for us, they tend to stay longer, they contribute to their communities, and we do not incur the cost of a high turnover rate with Alaska residents. But we also realize that you can't just go post a sign saying jobs available and expect a workforce to show up. Our jobs require a highly skilled, highly educated, highly trained workforce, and we don't necessarily have the capacity to provide all of that training to get somebody in the door. But the university does. And so back in 2011, we looked to partner with the university to develop a program called Pathways to Mining Careers. It starts with a college course that high school seniors and juniors take that gives them a broad survey of all of the different dozens, if not hundreds, of career opportunities in the mining industry. So they have some educational foundation to the choices they may make in their professions. I wish I had that opportunity when I was in high school here in Juneau, instead of just somehow falling into the geology profession that I did. But once they take that course, we try to pipeline interested students into the career and technical education program at UAS into a two-year diesel mechanic degree. That's our area of greatest need. Diesel mechanics is a very high-tech industry these days, high-tech profession, and they need training on the new tools that are out there. So we provide scholarships for them to get into your program. They do internships with us so they can make a wage while they're taking these classes. And ultimately, we hope that they choose us as an employer when they're done. We've had over 200 students between 2011 and 2016 take that entry-level class. We've had over 13 or 14 students that have made it all the way through their two-year degree program, and many of those students along the way have chosen to come work for Greens Creek. They still live here in Juneau and are providing for their families and their communities. So that's just one great example of how we've been able to leverage this tax credit. We've also endowed scholarships at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. We've done geology scholarships at the University of Alaska Anchorage, and we work with secondary schools in the region to develop capacity. So we urge a clean extension of this bill. If it does expire, if it does sunset at the end of this year, it's going to be very hard to bring this very valuable tax credit back into existence. So we hope this committee looks upon it favorably and moves it on up to House Finance. And we certainly appreciate Representative Tuck bringing this bill before you today. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Satre. I appreciate your testimony. Any questions for Mr. Satre? I have a question. I know we have talked, and sometimes it takes a few times for it to sink in. Your partnership with UAS begins with juniors and seniors in high school.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. So it's not just post-secondary training. It's reaching down into our secondary schools. Okay, that's great.
Chair Drummond, if I may.
Of course.
We know today's world, students at a young age, I think, are much more aware of the opportunities that may be out there. They're looking to choose educational tracks and professions even when they're, quite frankly, down in middle school. And so we felt it was important to start our program to benefit high school students, mm-hmm. to give them that opportunity to follow a pathway that could benefit them.
There's a theory that kids as young as in second or third grade know what they're going to do when they grow up. It's just interesting. And I'm not referring to the ones who can't read by third grade are going to populate our prisons, which is another problem. But I know the Associated General Contractors in Anchorage do go into the elementary schools or have in the past with education in the construction trades, and it's very effective. And very effective. Seeing no questions? All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I appreciate you coming in. We have Brandon Spanos is available for questions, and Doug Walrath of the Northwest Alaska Career and Technical Center is also on the phone for questions, unless you also had testimony, Mr. Walrath. We're actually ahead of ourselves by about 10 minutes, so if there's anyone else in the room who wishes to testify at this point? All right. Seeing none, I'm going to close invited testimony at this moment. Representative Parrish, you have a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd be interested in knowing what the average business that uses this looks like. Perhaps that's a question for Mr. Spanos.
Is Mr. Spanos in the room? Or is he on the phone? There he is. Okay.
Yes, I'm on the line, and Dan Stickle's in the room there as well.
Oh, okay. All right. And
the question, if I heard correctly, was what does the average company look like?
Yes.
Okay. Is that Mr. Spanos? Is that you on the phone?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead and introduce yourself.
Deputy Director with the Tax Division.
Great, thank you.
Sorry, Deputy Director with the Tax Division, Brandon Spanos.
Okay.
In 2016, we had 37 companies contribute to the, or rather claim the tax credit, for the education tax credit. And there's they vary on the types of companies that they are, from oil and gas, mining, to really any corporate income taxpayer can take the credit if they have a donation that qualifies.
Hello?
Go ahead.
Thank you. Is there...
We have some in the retail sector, some in the banking sector, mining sector, oil and gas.
Quite a few in fisheries as well, I saw on the little list here. I was actually hoping to learn a little bit more about the average size of the company.
Most of these are large companies. Large multinational, or at least multi-state companies.
What would the, do you happen to know about what size the smallest one would be? Or what the median, size would be?
I haven't done an analysis of that. I'm not sure if Dan Stickle there in the room knows, but looking at the list, and unfortunately this is confidential information that we can't share the names, but looking at the list, I'm not, I'd have to, none jumps out that's really small to me looking at it. But I'm sure we could get back to you with that information.
Thank you. I'd appreciate that.
Okay, Mr. Stickle, go ahead and put yourself on the record.
Sure. For the record, Dan Stickle, Chief Economist with Department of Revenue. I mostly echo what Brandon said. So one thing to keep in mind when you're talking about the size of the company is you're looking at companies that are large enough to have a significant corporate income tax liability to be able to apply these type of credits, and it is the primary beneficiaries are going to be large resource-oriented companies for the most part, are the ones that are really taking advantage of this.
And Madam Chair, if I might.
Representative Kopp, go ahead.
These would be the same companies producing the same employees that make this community work, that fund everything. Mm-hmm. Or Representative Parrish.
So it's large enough companies that have a tax liability that enables them to make contributions like this.
That's correct.
Okay. Representative Parrish, that was your question. Any follow-up?
Well, I think he said that he's going to give me some more information. There's one of the things that I'd be interested in seeing is if there were a way to get some of the smaller companies to participate as well. I don't know where the threshold might be. I know that right now the sweet spot for donations is $300,000. I believe the formula is 80% of donations up to, I'm sorry, 50% of donations up to $50,000, and then 100% of donations up to $300,000. And then again, 50% of donations from $300,000 up until you reach your maximum credited or tax deduction, which I believe is, or tax credit, which is $5 million, if I remember right. So it would tend to discourage companies which couldn't get to the $300,000 sweet spot from participating, and I'm sure that there are some smaller businesses in the state which would be interested, if they could, in participating in a program which let them promote education in the state and donate to the excellent causes which already so many of our larger businesses have.
Thank you, Representative Parrish. I have a question for either or both of you gentlemen from the Tax Division. I heard Mr. Spano say that you couldn't release the names of the companies because of confidentiality rules, but I understand that, but if the companies wanted to let us know, nothing is keeping them from doing that, like Greens Creek Mine, for example, and a number of other firms that have come to visit me in my office and revealed themselves as taking advantage of the tax credit and helping to create jobs and training in Alaska. Is that
yes,
correct?
Madam Chair, that's correct.
Okay, great. So I encourage all you companies out there to come and identify yourselves if you so choose. We would love to hear from you. Any more questions from the committee? Okay, seeing none. We will hold this bill and the other, and now bring this meeting to a close so we can take a few minutes to set up for the House Budget Subcommittee on the Department of Education and Early Development. And with that, we are adjourned with the House Education Committee at 8:55 a.m. Thank you all.